Right, let's move on. You hopefully got a handout because I want us to think about the issue of motivation. We're leading the series this year. This term has been the shuns of leadership. The shuns of leadership, and so I want to deal with the issue of motivation today. Now, when you think about it, motivation is it's the drive in the system. It's the oomph, for want of a better definition. It's the thing that pushes everything forward. That could be the plan, the project, but it's also the person. It's the thing that makes us move. It stops inertia. It shifts us. And for you guys, particularly in the early days of church planting, it is all about creating momentum. It's about getting movement in the system. And the truth is that people are going to need motivation to do that. You know, they're going to need reasons to go, to move, to do something. Now, if you want a definition, I quite like this one. This came from reading the Harvard Business Review. So motivation is the willingness to get the job done by starting rather than procrastinating, persisting in the face of distractions, and investing enough mental effort to succeed. Not a bad definition, I thought, worth pondering. But for our purposes today, what I thought we'd do is think very quickly about motivation. What is it? Why does it matter? How do we? And then I think probably the three big things. Number one, how do we create it? Secondly, how do we keep it? And thirdly, how do we regain it? Okay, so broadly speaking, that's what we're going to do. So motivation, let's think first of all about getting it. Where do we get it? How do we build momentum and get motivation into the system? Well, Simon Sinek, the best-selling author of this book, Start With Why, claims that every organization knows what they do because, you know, they're the products they make or the services they offer. Some organizations know how they do it. Those are the things. But very few organizations know why they do what they do. And he observes that it's the why that is way more important than the what and the how. So for example, taking a current example from Ian's material last week, imagine you're responsible for recruiting people for a welcoming team. Let's think about the what. What are you asking people to do? Well, you're asking them to be part of a team of people who greet people at the door in church on a Sunday morning. Now that is clear, it's concise, and it's concrete. Let's think about the how. How are you going to do that? Well, you're asking them to stand at the door, greet people as they arrive, hand them a meeting program, engage them in conversation, and perhaps take their details and introduce them to others if they look like they want to hang around. Again, look, that how is clear, it's concise, it's concrete. I just don't think it necessarily moves people. But let's think about the why. Why does that matter? Well, we want people who come to our church to know that they're welcomed and accepted and important, wherever they're from, whoever they are, and whatever they've done. And so we want their first impression of our church to be entirely consistent with the God we represent and the God we want them to know. So if we do our welcoming well, they'll find it easier to integrate into our church family. If we do it badly, they'll have no reason to return. Now, the why then tries to find the motivating factor. The why tries to get under the skin and address the sort of the reluctant, resistant will, and tries to excite it with reasons to do something. So the why comes from the answer to the questions, what's the point of this? Why are we doing this? Why does this matter? What's this for? What would happen if we didn't have this? And why would that be so bad? I had a conversation yesterday with a South African church planter And he is trying to put together a proposal for their denomination to support a particular local church where he's from, where a friend of mine runs it. And I was talking to this church planter, John, and saying pretty much what I've said to you guys before. You have to present the church planting proposal in such a way that everyone hears it and they say to themselves, this cannot not happen, or this has to happen. It would be a dereliction of our Christian duty and obligation if this doesn't go ahead. Now, given the situation to which he's planting, it's pretty easy to do that in terms of population numbers, the lack of a Bible teaching church, the diversity there, the opportunity that's there. And I'm saying, look, you've got to give people the why. Why should I get on board with this? Why should I support this? I know what you're proposing and I hear how you might do it, but why? Now, Craig Hamilton in his book suggests that what he calls inside out communication should be used in a whole host of different settings that kind of give people the why. So it's not just for recruitment, for people, for welcoming. Tell people the why, whether you're leading a meeting, having a one-to-one conversation, preaching a sermon, or talking to your kids, give them a why. For example, in a meeting, remind them not only what the meeting is and how it's going to operate, remind them why it matters. Remind them why it's a good use of their time. Remind them why the decisions you make are worth the effort of them engaging. I think most of us naturally start to talk about what we do in our church plant and how we're going to do what we do in our church plant. And we hope that others just get the why. It's kind of obvious. But I think if we want people to follow us, then we need to be clear about our why. Why are we doing this? Why is it worth the effort? Because it's only the why that begins to address the issue of motivation. So that is how we get it. That's how you get motivation. That's how you're going to shift people and overcome inertia. Find the why. Now, to help us do that, it's worth thinking about three core motivations which have been identified by Daniel Pink in his book Drive. He talks about three common motivating factors. Now, largely this is for the workplace, and it's come out of some research from MIT in the States. But he says that principally there are three motivating factors. Number one is autonomy. Number two, mastery. Three, purpose. Let's think about those very briefly. Autonomy. This is about opinions and input making a difference, and people not just being automatons in a system unthinkingly required to process pre-programmed tasks. When you think about it, it's massively demotivating to have the kind of the creativity and the innovation and the freedom crushed out of you. And so it's worth encouraging people to play to their strengths. If they're good at something, give them some rope. People want to be valued. They want to be appreciated for what they can contribute. So insofar as you can, give them autonomy, give them that freedom. Secondly, mastery. This is about getting better and better and improving skills. It's massively demotivating to think that you've made no progress, you know, years later, and you've stagnated and plateaued in terms of your personal development. I've been stood at this door for 5 years. I'm not getting any better at it, you know. And so it is worth creating opportunities insofar as you can to experiment, encourage people to think about new solutions to both new and old problems. So, you know, in other words, don't just tell people what they need to do, but give them freedom to kind of dream and to put stuff into practice. In other words, it doesn't have to be the same old, same old. It could be that the guy who's been doing this for 2 years can think, and you know what, I absolutely fundamentally changed the way we do welcoming. Oh, okay, how? Okay, that sounds brilliant, make it happen. Thirdly, purpose. This is about having a clear line of sight from a task or a responsibility to the vision of the organization. Again, it's massively demotivating to think of yourself as a cog in a large machine and not be aware of how that cog contributes. I don't think it matters the size of cog that you are. I think what matters is, how is what I do, how does that contribute to the whole? And so it's often worth personalizing the purpose of the work. Look, I know you think you're just handing out service sheets, but you're not. The way you do that communicates the value that you're placing on someone as they come into the door. It's an indication of a bias to help. Good morning, it's great to see you. Look, this is our meeting sheet. It ought to explain everything that happens. Are you new, et cetera, et cetera? Help them see how what they do fits. We're trying to welcome outsiders in. You're the first person they meet. So help people see how they do, how what they do makes a difference. Okay. Motivation, keeping it. How do we keep it? I think it's all about celebrating the wins. A good little chapter in Wisdom in Leadership, Craig Hamilton, the one at the end. Look, leaders inevitably look forward because that is the future that we'd like to change. And look, that is the right thing to do. We need to be forward focused, forward orientated. We need to make plans, but we also need to look back. We need to appreciate and celebrate what God has enabled us to do. At our annual start of year prayer meeting, I took some time to look back and praise and look forward to plan. And in all honesty, it was extraordinary what a small church like Bridge Church Peckham had been able to accomplish in the space of a COVID-ridden year. I mean, it was extraordinary. And I don't think we'd done anything special. But when we just looked back at sort of month on month what had happened, it was kind of, wow. And it was great to be able to do that. And I was thinking, actually, we missed a trick, because in one of the senses, we could have kind of, kept provided fuel to the system that comes from celebration. If you've ever climbed up a mountain or cycled up a hill, I think what we're talking about here is taking a moment to pause and see where you've come from before ploughing on ahead. So it is worth celebrating the win. Celebrate the small wins as you go, and also schedule time in for those kind of big, official, intentional celebrations, because it's the fuel of motivation. Because when you think about it, celebrating communicates a whole heap of stuff. It communicates that God is the giver of good things, and he is the one who is responsible for all growth. It communicates to your team that thankfulness and gratitude are important. Celebration communicates that you're interested in pouring into them and not only what you can get out of them. Celebrating communicates that what you see as a win is in fact the vision slowly becoming a reality. In other words, they begin to think, okay, what is this church about? I know it's about the vision, but when you celebrate someone becoming a Christian or professing faith, it's like, yes, yeah, that's why we're doing what we're doing. And so for us, the conversion of a single mum put fuel in the system. Hamilton observes, he says, look, you need celebration because no matter how enthusiastic, godly and developed your team is, they will still lose momentum at times. The friction of ministry will push against them. The grind of the task will sap enthusiasm from them and slow them down. And this is just part of life and is to be expected. I think he's right. Okay, what about when you lose it? Happy to go for a little bit longer on this. So we've thought about motivation, how do you get it in the first place? Motivation, how do you keep it? What about regaining it when you've lost it? Look, there's a good little article. And the great thing about the Harvard Business Review is they have lots of little articles. The two writers, Clark and Saxberg, address four reasons why employees lose their motivation. A couple of observations. One would be we haven't got employees on the whole, but we've got volunteers. Second thing is, look, it's like a lot of the great business stuff. You read it and you think that is so obvious. But then you realise, why didn't I know that? Or why didn't I do it? It's obvious once you've heard it and once you've thought about it, it's not so obvious that you're doing it. So they identify kind of four motivation killers: a values mismatch, lack of self-efficacy, disruptive emotions, and attribution errors. Let me explain what those are very quickly. A values mismatch is essentially saying, look, honestly, I don't care enough to do this. You know, you can see how that kind of, you wouldn't have any enthusiasm for doing it. There's no motivation. I just don't care. So, you know, if the task doesn't connect or contribute that something that people value, it's just not going to happen. So the key thing is to say, okay, what do you care about? And then link that to what you're actually trying to do. Secondly, lack of self-efficacy. It's people saying, look, I just don't think I'm able to do this. So they just don't think they're capable, or they have the capacity to be able to fulfill a task or responsibility. And obviously the way to address that is to build their sense of confidence and competence. I think sometimes people who are in that are just worried it's going to take more out of them than they can afford, either in terms of time or effort. And actually what it needs us to be is an encourager, express our confidence in their ability, encourage them that the effort that goes in will be worth it, and also to provide them the additional support where required. And when you see it happening, to keep fueling it by celebrating the wins. Disruptive emotions is just, I'm too upset to do this. So it's kind of the three things they identify is that people are anxious, people are angry, or people are sort of flat, they're depressed about stuff. And so, you know, just the demotivating factor that comes from that sort of emotional overload that means they can't quite get involved in something. And so worth stepping aside from that. I think what you need there is kind of active listening of the kind of stuff that we talked about and perhaps touched on a bit with Rob. You want to get them to explain what they're going through. So ask them to explain it, summarize what you've heard, and said, have I got that right? Have I understood you? If you have understood them, that's great. If you haven't, ask them to have another crack at it. Normally that softens the emotions a bit. They've understood that you've understood. It's usually worth saying, can I have a day to think about this and come back to you tomorrow? That gives them time to sort of reflect and calm down a bit. And then you can begin to think about how you address things. And you want to obviously deal with those things differently in terms of anger or depression or anxiety. Obviously, if someone is angry that something other than them has caused or will cause them harm or prevent them doing what they're meant to be doing, it is worth just trying to change the way they think about that. In other words, not to deny the causality, but to sort of reframe that threat and say, look, I'm sure someone did that without knowing. Look, I think it might have been accidental. I don't think it was intentional. So I don't think your anger needs to be directed towards a person who was doing it deliberately. So it's just trying to sort of manage that situation. Just in terms of depression, often this comes from a place that they believe that they're inadequate in a way that they can't control. It's beyond them. And I think it's just, you know, it requires energy pouring into them, suggesting that you're not broken, you're not inadequate. Look, if we invest more energy in effective strategies, I think we'll see a different outcome. There's no reason to quit. And anxiety is kind of, we want them to be able to respond positively to assistance alongside reminders that they're capable, that they can in fact succeed on their own. Attribution errors. I don't know what went wrong with this. You know, that's demotivating, isn't it? When people can't work out why am I struggling with this task, or they begin to say there's nothing I can do about this, and I think we just need to take time to say, look, what are you doing? What's going wrong? Why do you think you're struggling with this task or responsibility? Now, those kind of things, when people don't want to take responsibility for something, when they find excuses not to, to fulfill a role or responsibility, attribution errors are often there. And I think what there is an obstruction, but I think what we want to do is spend time looking at, you know, what is it about that that makes you think it's insurmountable, so that you can begin to think how you can get beyond it. So look, all of those are kind of, they are, they're motivation thieves, and you want to try and work out or differentiate what kind of motivation thief is it. They're different because each one of them is going to require a slightly different way to handle it. Okay, so there you go. Look, so motivation, how do you get it in the first place? Find the why. How do you keep it once you've got it? Celebrate the wins. How do you regain it? Identify and address the issues. I've put down a whole load of successful, some useful resources that you might want. Worth saying, there are the two YouTube clips, about 15 minutes each. There's not much of your time. There's some Harvard Business Review articles there. I think if you read my notes thoroughly enough, you'll be fine. A couple of chapters there from Craig Hamilton. And I've put something on there that is called an engagement index, which is just, it's a tool that's used to engage employer engagement in what you're about. And obviously you get, they mark it up and then you work out where they are. Obviously, if you've got disengaged people, they're demotivated. If you've got highly engaged people, they're highly motivated. So it's just a way of doing that. And it could be that you want to tweak that for what you're involved in. Okay, let me stop there. Motivation, it is absolutely critical. You, what you want is a group of highly motivated individuals that are working well as a team, who are behind what you're about. So you've got to think about, how do I get that? How do I keep it? And what do I do when I lose it? Some of that stuff might help. Let me stop there. Comments, queries, questions.
And the stuff on why really challenging. Like, I guess one of the things that it made me think was that actually it's even more so our job to, and important that we address that question for people and communicate it. Because I think actually myself and also lots of people here would be quite happy just pulling the lever. You know, they wouldn't necessarily want to ask the question of why am I doing this? You know, because that raises more questions, doesn't it? So when you find people just doing stuff in church, you know, they're not going to be the ones asking that question. So I think we should be asking it and addressing it and communicating that to people, because it won't happen otherwise, I don't think. But that's just a reflection.
I think the why question is absolutely critical. So what are you doing? How are you doing it? Those matter for sure. But why? And actually everything. So even this talk, I've got to try and persuade you guys, after you listened to Andy's and you've concentrated on that and you've thought about that. I've got to persuade you early doors. Why do you need to listen to a talk about motivation? I need to convince you, persuade you, this is worth listening to. And it's kind of, it's almost why, this is what you get if you do, this is what you get if you don't. So somehow in your communication, in my communication rather, I want to try and say, this is why you have to think about this. And I think that spreads everywhere. You know, your kids, why do you need to do homeschooling? Why do you need to do your homework? You know, why are we going for a walk as a family? It's all the why questions, isn't it? And the danger is, as the kids grow up, they don't ask it and we don't feel the need to address it. But the motivation thing is only addressed, I think, by the why. And, you know, for goodness sake, doing what we do, there's a whole load of reasons why. You know, getting beyond the glory of God, the honour of Christ, you know, it's getting to the nitty gritty. isn't it? And the more nitty-gritty we can get. In other words, I'd like you to welcome people at church to the glory of God. It's, well, you're doing it for the glory of God. Now, that's right. That's right. But really, you know, drill down into the detail a bit of why this matters. If you do it well, this, if you do it badly, this is, if we get rid of this, you know, it's not great. If we do it well, what we end up is this, and we end up with someone integrated into the church family, contributing to the work of the gospel, to the glory of God and the honor of Christ. So those guys, I think it is worth doing. I was thinking about this for our exec team meeting in commission. We don't often start by saying, we could do with a reminder, guys, we're here for this reason. There's real value being here. The decisions we make here will have an impact. Pete, question, go for it.
Thanks, Brooks. I like the idea of celebrating the wins, and I think that drops off and it's quite easy, practical to do, isn't it? Got any other examples? I like the prayer meeting one and the sort of annual look back, but are there any others that occur to you?
Yeah, I mean, I would just take, you know, split the year into different bits. There's annual, there's termly, there's monthly. The prayer meetings are the obvious time to do it because you've got the people you most want there to be there. But I think, for example, small group, if you've got small groups and you've got the leaders together, send out something beforehand. What are the three big encouragements for you and your small groups this year? Actually force people to be positive, to celebrate those wins. And just think, where has God enabled us to accomplish the things that we're after? Now, what you need to think about is that you can reinforce what you're trying to do by the wins that you celebrate. In other words, the things you celebrate speak volumes. So this lady becoming a Christian, we're going to interview her. We're going to hear from her. Why she became a Christian, how she became a Christian, and so on. So, because that's just, you know, that's massive. That shows what we're trying to do. Other things like, you know, even Adrian's departure for Holland, which is a kind of a real, oof. Actually, that's a win. Why is that? Well, one of the reasons we started Bridge Church Peckham was to provide training opportunities in gospel ministry for young black guys with leadership potential in order to send them out. So Adrian is actually an answer to prayer. He sort of represents one of the reasons why we started it. It's hurt us, of course it has, but that's part of the reason why we did what we did. So that's a win. So even his departure was an opportunity to say, it is a bit gutting, isn't it? Because we're going to miss them. But actually, that is brilliant. That is brilliant that he's had 2 and a bit years worth of experience, and he's now in Rotterdam trying to plant a church to reach the migrant community from the Gambia. It's brilliant. I think Craig Hamilton's article, it's the last chapter in his book. He might have a couple more suggestions worth looking at that.